Welcome to Talking About Justice in Nunavut, a series of audio interviews presented by the Law Society of Nunavut. Today we're going to talk about creating a safe, healthy, and respectful workplace. We'll also talk about how to deal with harassment or violence in the workplace. This can be a difficult topic, and you may find the information to be upsetting. As always, take care of yourself. This means that you might want to take any steps that you need to emotionally prepare yourself, and also think about what care you might need after listening to this program. We will share some resources for support in this program. My name is Gloria Song, and I'm an Access to Justice co-representative and project coordinator for the Law Society of Nunavut. The Law Society of Nunavut has been working on a project to raise public awareness in the territory about harassment and violence in the workplace and what to do about it. For this program, we'll hear from a lawyer about what workplace violence is and what the legal requirements are for dealing with it. We'll also learn about workplace harassment, which is also against the law. Then we'll talk to the Akiyemavik Society in Arviat about what we need to think about to support a safe, healthy, and respectful workplace that is informed by an Inuit Kayamaya Tukungit approach. First, it's important to know what workplace violence and harassment is. Odessa Odell is a lawyer with the law firm Border Ladner Gervais, who has supported the Law Society of Nunavut in training its members about the law on workplace violence and harassment. Here's Odessa talking about how to recognize workplace violence.
Workplace violence is more than actions that may cause injury to one's body. It also includes attempts and threats to cause injury. Examples of workplace violence include hitting, shoving, pushing, kicking, shaking your fist, destroying property, throwing things, or making a threat that you will harm someone. Employers have a responsibility to ensure a safe and healthy workplace for all workers, including one that is free from violence. Employers are responsible to identify risks of violence within the workplace and to tell them to their workers. This means employers must think about different kinds of violence that might occur, where violence might occur, and how to address and prevent it. For example, if you must work closely with someone who has a history of violent behavior, your employer may have to tell you about this risk and ensure your safety. Or, if your employer knows that a situation of family violence may expose workers to a risk of physical injury at work, your employer must do their best to protect the workers while at work. Your employer must make every reasonable effort to protect you at work. This might include implementing a policy if violence has or reasonably could be expected to occur at your workplace. A policy to deal with workplace violence will include processes and procedures on how to deal with workplace violence. Workers also have a responsibility to familiarize themselves with the policy if their work has one, and do their part to make sure the workplace is safe for everyone. If you experience or witness an emergency situation of violence at work, you should consider calling the RCMP as well as reporting it to your employer.
That was Odessa Odell, a lawyer from the law firm Borden Ladner Gervais, talking about the law on workplace violence. It's also important to be aware of workplace harassment. Harassment is unwelcome comments or behavior that threatens a worker's health or safety. Examples include bullying, threats, inappropriate comments, jokes or gestures, isolating someone, sabotaging someone's work, gossiping, or revenge against someone for being involved in a harassment complaint. Workers have a right to a safe and healthy workplace, free from harassment and violence. Workers also have a right not to be discriminated against. Like in the case of workplace violence, the law requires employers to take steps to prevent and stop harassment that is connected to the workplace and work. Workplaces must have a policy on harassment that describes the process for reporting harassment. Workers should make sure they understand what harassment is and what their work's harassment policy is. Everyone must work together in keeping the workplace safe and free from harassment. It's important to know that all workers have a right to a safe, healthy, and respectful workplace. But how do we make this happen, especially in Nunavut? How can we support a safe, healthy, and respectful workplace informed by Inuit Kayamaya Tukungit values? We have here with us Joe Karatek and Shirley Taglik from the Akiyemavik Society in Arviat to talk about this. Joe is from Arviat and is Akiyemovik Society's Inuit Kayamaya Tukongit Research Coordinator. Shirley Tagalik is on the board of directors for Akiyemovik Society and is a long-term northern resident. It's a pleasure to have you join us today, Joe and Shirley. My first question for you is, from an Inuit perspective, informed by an Inuit Kayamaya Tukongit approach, can you describe what a healthy workplace might look like? Joe, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think when we look at any setting, whether it's the family, if it's got anything to do with IQ expectations and any cultural expectations, must always be reflected in the way we conduct business, anything we're going to do. So being respectful of the elders, people who have the skills and knowledge, and especially those that are carrying the load for any operation, try to be supportive, be considerate of all the other people, that it's the team, if you have a team of people that you're working with, that their well-being is something you put ahead of oneself. I think when everybody is able to do that and you have an administrator or leader that is also understanding of that, then all these expectations and, if you want to call them guidelines, there's some things that promote not being so micromanaged, but to have people want to be there, their contributions are appreciated, and they're always being treated fairly. I think anytime we do that in any setting, whether it be the family or at the workplace or an organization, it's going to make a difference if it's not just words, if it's not just these are the expectations. It has to have a deeper depth, has to have a solid foundation. And once those you have a solid foundation, then it's a lot easier to manage and keep it organized.
Thanks, Joe. And how about you, Shirley?
Well, I would just add that that solid foundation is always situated in the four big laws of Inuit Kayumaya Tukangit. So if you are, looking to build a healthy workplace, then it must be built on that foundation of, having a common purpose, working for a common for the common good, being harmonious, being respectful, and continually planning to achieve, something sustainable for the future. So if you use those four big laws to ground how you design and introduce your workplace environment, then you pretty much can't go wrong. And then, all of the IQ principles provide opportunities for you to meet those four foundational goals, because the Inuit Kayumaya Tukongit principles are actually processes that help us apply those four foundational laws. The problem is, of course, you need to have a deep understanding of how all of these things work together in a very holistic way to create this environment that is conducive to health and well-being. And unfortunately, very few of our managers and supervisors have this kind of big overall approach. And I would say the foundational laws are ones that are not necessarily inherent in Kavanaugh QQ way of envisioning a workplace. And so we have to, you know, really seriously sit down, plan out what we want to accomplish, what we want our workplaces to look like, and make the shifts that accommodate those IQ foundational laws and enable us to implement those principles as a way of achieving the vision that we have for a workplace that promotes health and well-being.
I'd like to draw on a little bit more of something that both of you have mentioned. What are some things that managers, supervisors, and other people in management can do to help create this healthy workplace that you're describing?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we found in trying to promote the IQ principles, the foundational laws, the holistic approach is that I'm not sure if asking people to take a paradigm shift is as easy as it sounds. And I think that one of the things we would probably need to do is somehow find a way of looking at internalizing these concepts, because a lot of times our muscle reflexes will take over under pressure. I think when you're talking about things in general, and we're planning and doing visioning and those kinds of things, and overall organizational expectations, I think that's not a difficult thing for people to agree to understand. And when it comes to action and things happen that may be difficult, hard to do, pressure builds up, that's where it becomes difficult to apply those. And a lot of times it'll be because of ourselves. So how do we stay obligated to those under those kinds of pressures is something that I think you have to work through, because it's, you don't know how you're going to react unless you're in a situation of difficulty. And I think that whether you did it right or wrong is not so much the only thing to think about, but why did that happen? Like, how do we prevent that from happening again? And so sometimes the plan has to have a resetter or something like that. So I know in the Inuit system, one of the IQ principles, which is consensus building, they call it consensus building because that's the closest thing they can translate it into English, but it is a deeper, greater concept. And so when you have a situation where we're trying to abide by these say IQ expectations and organizational approaches, and things become difficult from within, that can probably be done internally. You can have a system in there that addresses that. And when the pressure is coming from the outside, that's a different thing. So again, you have to have strategies and things in place as well as you could, but you also have to have something that will deal with the unexpected. Nobody saw this one coming. And with the Inuit system, the reason why they thought holistically was because they understood that they didn't control everything, but they needed a management system that can handle the situation they're in. And so creating a management system based on holistic thinking is a really interesting concept. And I think that conversation would take us forever to try to explain, but it's understanding that when you try to set something up to be able to micromanage it, there's a big difference to getting people ready to handle the situation which they may encounter. And so the whole approach has to be It has to be that itself, it's independent. Each person has the capacity to be able to make the decision on the spot, to be able to accommodate the problem or situation they're trying to deal with. Having everything preset, of course, is the best we can do, but it never plays out that way. It's always going to have gaps, and when the answer is always run home anytime you run into a problem, go ask the father what to do, and you can't get to the father, how is this going to work? You have to make the system more independent. But see, that's where trust is going to have to be in place. They're going to have to trust their employees. The employees will have to trust the system will work. And when it doesn't, there has to be something that helps them deal with that. A lot of times when you are used to a system, under pressure, that will kick in. It's what you know that takes over. And if you have to readjust people from that, that's where I think the training, and revisiting and trying to get everybody comfortable with it and looking at it as a team all the time will help.
Thanks, Joe. And how about you, Shirley? What do you think management can do?
Yeah, I think, Joe describes, in terms of creating a healthy workplace, to give recognition and trust to those people who have the skills to do the job. So that, if you need a decision made quickly, you rely on the people who are in the field closest to the problem at hand. However, beyond that, an Inuit Kamiamayakukangi management system also requires that it is set up in a more horizontal fashion, whereas the Kablinak Kamiamayakukangi system is a very vertical system. So, managers and supervisors up the chain are making decisions without necessarily involvement or consultation with people who are working on the front line. And this is like the antithesis of QQ, of IQ, sorry. Pilari Kategin requires that we bring as much expertise, as much knowledge, as many skills and brains to seek solutions collaboratively so that we end up with the best possible result. And in our workplaces, if we're not doing that, if we're not making spaces for people to actively contribute, and if we're not valuing that contribution, then it's suddenly not a healthy workplace. It becomes, exercises in frustration, isolation, marginalization. And that's typically what we see, especially in most institutionalized organizations, that people don't have the authority, don't feel that sense of buy-in and contribution to really actively participate and contribute to seeking a solution that is going to improve the common good. And so, again, it comes back to very careful design of your management system, how you engage and interact with, the people that you are supervising, and how you situate yourself so that you are not the expert in the room, but that you are valuing and collecting all of the contributions that everybody has to bring to the table, and facilitating that information in such a way that you come to the best possible outcomes. That's what IQ looks like in the workplace. And that's not what we see generally in, you know, our workplaces in Nunavut.
Thanks, Shirley. So we've talked about some of the stuff that management can do to help create that space that is a healthy workplace. Are there things that workers themselves can do to contribute to a healthy workplace?
It's one of the things I think that we're probably promoting is a holistic approach. And when you talk about holistic approach, there has to be a platform that everybody looks at this holistic perspective from. One of the basic things to understand, and we're as children are made to understand, is that holistic perspective to me is something that could reflect history, present, and the future, or that everything has two sides to it. There's not just a positive or a negative. Anything that any subject of which anything we look at or anything will have an opposite side to it. And this is where the harmony and balance thing comes from. And I think that you have to continue to have a system in there that is going to determine whether you have to counterbalance something or maintain the balance. When you look at anything holistically, one of the basic platforms that we were introduced to by an elder, Angelik, when I asked him, what is it that we're not teaching people today that their observation skills are not very strong? When I say that, I immediately mean the hunter-gatherer economy system. And this is another concept altogether. So one of the things, especially a person such as myself that actually grew up and was born in the hunter-gatherer society system and now being introduced into the Western economy system, I've seen the conflict throughout my whole life. And so this is where... if you're going to say, what should the employees do? What should the people do? It's hard to just go there and say it should be like this, this, and this. I think you have to help everybody understand the setting. And I think if you look at the way Inuit people expectations are based on a hunter-gatherer system, it's quite often in the opposite direction of the other economy system. There's conflicting values. So when you're in a mixed cultural setting, it actually changes on the number of dynamics of the combination of people you have at the workplace. One of the examples that comes into my head is that I used to run a dog team when I was young, and I had all kinds of dogs, different kinds of dogs, and one of the things about the pure husky Eskimo dog is that it's designed specifically for this setting up north. It doesn't have to eat very much. It doesn't have to drink very much, and it's just very designed for the setting. And when we start having mixed blood, mixed breed and stuff, I'm not trying to make this a racial thing or anything of that nature. But one of the things is that the other dogs needed a shelter. They needed to get water every day, and they needed to get fed every day. A real husky dog can get by with three... not eat for 3 days and be totally okay. In fact, if you overfeed it, it actually would be a problem. So each person is going to be very different. And I think that you have to keep looking at the way the individuals are to answer this properly. So if we're looking at a group of people and these are the people, you have to make it work with what and who you got. You could put expectations and everything else and you know, have general structures there that are going to be, but if you don't accommodate each person, their needs, where and respect the paradigm in which they came from. It's unfair to say, okay, these are going to be our expectations, because there'll be some people who got prepared properly for that, and that's easy to say that. But when there's a lot of people who haven't been prepared to be able to be in that setting of expectations, you have to find a way to help them if they're willing. It first has to be they agree to do this. They're willing to do this, and they actually want to do this. Because IQ isn't something that works by enforcement. It only really works if you accept it and want it to be that. So human beings are a very complex in the sense that we have the power to decide. Like, we have decisional making ability. With animals, they have very little decision making to be made. Most of them have instincts that are built into them. And with human beings, we have to teach everybody those things. And so the background of people have always got to be considered, and how do you bring them forward from there at them agreeing to go with you on that. So any particular problem that we're going to encounter, it can have complex reasons why it's there. And those are the ones that are hard to address. And so I'm not sure if it's the right thing to say, but the situation of which the impact of colonization has had on Inuit people has to now be factored in as part of the problem, on top of other lack of skills and knowledge they may have to be able to work in a setting such as the new world, the new economy system. And so if you could look at this holistically and accurately, hopefully, this is something that has to, I think, always have a team that has to do that. Like, there has to be, whether it's the people themselves that are part of the team, or you have a couple of people that are in charge of looking at certain areas. But again, it's something that works a lot better if people buy into it. And so that's one of the, you know, that's one of the things about IQ. Like, here's a very blunt example. With the environment being as harsh as it is, if you didn't abide by the holistic Inuit cultural approach, you didn't live. It's impossible for an individual person to survive in this setting. It always has to be a team approach. It always has to be the whole system is working well together to withstand the environmental pressures of the setting, because it's just so supremely difficult. And we human beings aren't pre-designed to, like, we're the most vulnerable things in this setting. We're the weakest things in this setting. We're not the strongest one. Without technology, we have nothing. So when I asked about the observation skills not being there, what are we not teaching? Amani immediately said that, but it's not one thing. And I go, what do you mean by that? Well, it's always about life. But we need technology to survive in this environment. So there's three concepts there he mentioned. And each one of these have a large, they're huge. There's so much information. Well, life is impossible to even contained in conversation. Technology is a lot easier because it's physical, it's obvious, and technology in the sense of technology in this case is a way of thinking, is a technology. How you can think of inventing a solution is a technology. The items of which you create to solve the problem are technology. So technology is something that isn't just a computer, you're a form of technology in this case. And so you could improve yourself. But the environment, the setting of which we have to have everything comes from, is going to come from our environment. And so when he said it that way, I said, oh, I retract my question. because I realized that when we ask a question, we often don't realize how many things have to come into play to actually answer that properly. We're looking for one answer for one question. And even if there's three different answers to the questions, which one do you think it works best? Like we're so designed to do that now. We're in the Inuit system, in a holistic perspective concept, you never approach anything with that knowing that it's the setting will always have an influence, and that technology you have available at hand and the situation of which the people are in all have to be looked at to look at the answer of any moment.
That's a really important way to look at it. How about you, Shirley?
So I think that, what Joe's been talking about is a critical challenge that, Inuit everywhere face because they are trying to negotiate recovery from immense colonization and continuing colonization through, our institutions and the way our workplaces are set up. But also, there requires healing and a revitalization of the IQ understandings that are actually going to help people get their lives back on track. And so at Akumavik, our commitment is to healing and the revitalization of Inuit Kayumayatukangit. And one of the key pieces that we begin with is Inuminak, the process of making a capable human being, because it requires us as individuals to continually be seeking that capacity in order to be able to deal with the changes and the critical issues that we face every day in our lives. The elders say that it's all about being in relationship. The way we live life must be in respectful relationship. That's one of the four big laws. And so if we consider Inuit Kayumayatukangit perceptions of what respectfulness requires, then it takes us right back to those IQ principles. And it's actually all laid out in the IQ principles. Inukategitsiangnak emphasizes collective well-being and how we meet the needs of others before we seek our individual needs. Tunganarnak is how we are inclusive and welcoming and create that supportive environment that lets everybody do their very best and work towards those healthy relationships. We talked about, which is, you know, seeking understanding, finding common ground, having a shared purpose. So everybody taking on their individual role to carry their share of the workload and focus on achieving, you know, the goals that have been identified. And Fiji Tsarangnak is the way we, you know, serve the common good, taking on even those tasks that are not popular, not easy to accomplish, but doing them so that we can, you know, contribute, so that everybody has a role in contributing. And then, you know, as Joe mentioned, the key to all of this is Ayiketiginak, where we're continually negotiating, recognizing everybody's equal and trusted voice in a process that allows us to, you know, confront conflict and negotiate solutions and come together and get back into that balance that is required. So, you know, in fact, all of the issues that arise in our workplaces have solutions in Inuit Kayumayakakangi. If we were able to really use IQ as a way to restore that that kind of healthy environment that would enable us all to be as productive as we possibly could be in our workplaces.
You've been listening to Joe Karatek and Shirley Tagalik from the Akwemovic Society in Arviat, talking about their thoughts on what needs to be considered to support a safe, healthy, and respectful workplace in Nunavut, informed by Inuit Kayamai Tukangit. We also heard from lawyer Odessa Odell from law firm Border Ladner Gervais about what workplace violence is. This wraps up the end of part one of episode 3 of Talking About Justice in Nunavut, but be sure to tune into part 2, where we'll hear some more from Joe and Shirley about this topic. We've talked about some serious topics during this audio program, and sometimes that can bring up some difficult feelings. If you need to talk to someone, the Nunavut Kamatsiaktut helpline offers anonymous and confidential telephone support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The number is 1-800-265-3333. Again, that's 1-800-265-3333. This program has been part of the Law Society of Nunavut's project on raising awareness about harassment and violence in the workplace. We are thankful to our funders, the Department of Justice Canada. If you want to listen to this recording again, this recording can be found on the Law Society of Nunavut's website, along with other resources about harassment in the workplace that we've developed with the support of Ilinapa Skills Development Center. For more information about this project or other resources, you can also call the Law Society of Nunavut toll-free at 1-844-979-2330. That's 1-844-979-2330. It's been a pleasure talking about justice in Nunavut with you. We hope you all stay safe and healthy.